You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 8th of December, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. I do apologise for no Daily Nationalist yesterday, but my cold was really too bad to record one. I hope you enjoyed the Albion narrations. I am going to muddle through today, and of course that is because I have a co-host with me today, and that is geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Well, after having read the Time magazine article, and you know which one I'm talking about, I guess I'm okay. Speaking of apologies, my lecture yesterday had the final 15-minute cutoff. We have re-uploaded a better version, and it has the full thing there. It's like an hour and 4 minutes. So if you're wondering about that, it was just a glitch, and it's been fixed.
Yeah, we've re-upped the full podcast now. Yes, we seem to be having all sorts of technical problems at the moment, but hopefully we'll get through with this episode. And today we're going to be talking about Ukraine once again, and particularly about Ukraine because of some Pew Research data which has just come out. And we're going to be using globalresearch.ca for our notes once again. And this article actually came out 3 days ago. And they begin by saying, Ukrainian entry into NATO is the brightest of all red lines for the Russian elite, not just Putin. In more than 2.5 years of conversations with key Russian players, from knuckle draggers in the dark recesses of the Kremlin to Putin's sharpest liberal critics, I have yet to find anyone who views Ukraine in NATO as anything other than a direct challenge to Russian interests. And that was William Burns, the US ambassador to Moscow, writing to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice in 2008. So they knew about this all the way back then. And further from the text from the ambassador to Moscow writing to Condoleezza Rice, it also says, there's nothing inevitable about the multipolar world. Its emergence depends entirely on a war that is just beginning and whose outcome is still unknown. That it says here is from the text as well. So is that also from 2008, Matt? What's going on here?
Yeah, when he says from the text, I think it's the same thing. It's very clumsy how he did it. But and Condoleezza was somewhat of a Soviet specialist, at least when she was in grad school. But this was the, in the 90s, 2000s, this was the norm. Everything that these guys said 10 years ago or more has been totally abandoned now, proving that, proving who's in charge here and how many principles these people actually have. So I don't know what William Burns is saying, if he's still around, but he's, I'm sure, saying exactly what he's told to say.
Well, continuing with the Pew Research data, according to a survey conducted by the Pew Research Center, about half of Americans say they are either extremely, 24%, or very, 26%, concerned about the possibility of US and NATO support for Ukraine leading to a US war with Russia. And that is from Americans' Concerns About War in Ukraine, Wider Conflict, Possible US-Russia Clash, by the Pew Research Center. This is a smaller percentage than one might expect, given the risk that an unexpected escalation that could trigger a nuclear war. Even so, this is what the data tell us, and the data don't lie. But here's the interesting part. Even though half the country is worried about a direct conflagration with Russia, they still overwhelmingly support the other measures that Biden has taken to punish Russia for its alleged aggression. Here is some more from the survey. Sizable majorities of both Republicans, 73%, and Democrats, 80%, say they approve of the US placing strict economic sanctions on Russia. Similar shares say they approve of sending military equipment and weapons to Ukraine. About 7 in 10 Democrats and 6 in 10 Republicans also say they approve of stationing large numbers of US military in NATO countries near Ukraine. Again, that comes from Americans' concerns about war in Ukraine, wider conflict, possible US-Russia clash by the Pew Research Center. So it's rather strange here that all these Americans are very worried about America ending up in a hot war against Russia, yet at the same time they seem to approve of poking the bear somewhat with all these sanctions and sending these weapons to Ukraine. I mean, all I can suggest is that the American public aren't really aware of what's going on, but you would think that they are aware to some degree because they're concerned that there might be a hot war. But surely they can see that sending weapons and sanctions could lead to that. What do you think of it? What do you think about this, Matt?
Well, this author, while his heart's in the right place, is extremely naive. The so-called data lie all the time. This is the same research center. Actually, all the major pollsters are talking about consumer confidence in America going up, and that Americans aren't concerned with unemployment. They've been pushing this for a long time. The polls are all over the place, and it depends on who runs them or in the sample size. I remember seeing on RT, not quite 50% believe that of Americans, that is, should push Ukraine towards a peace deal as soon as possible. I found it interesting, this very same one, that as far as American pollsters go, 26% thought that Moscow was winning this war, 26%, the exact number, thought Ukraine won. And about 46%, 7, said that neither one was. So that part of the propaganda hasn't sunk in. And again, the same place, if 58% say they should Washington should back Ukraine for as long as it takes, and that's the exact quote, and but that's declined recently to about 45. And the population, a few months ago, it was about 38% thought Kiev should enter peace talks. Now it's 50%. So of course, those who think that Ukraine is winning are the same people who will push for more involvement. But beyond all that, foreign policy has nothing to do with public opinion. Americans don't know the first thing about foreign policy in general, certainly not in Russia-Ukraine. These people just heard of some of these towns just a few weeks ago, and so their opinions are pretty meaningless. It's meaningless even further because we all know that they have been subject to a propaganda barrage that we haven't seen since the Russia election thing. So the very fact that this avalanche of propaganda has produced these numbers itself suggests that there's something else going on. But as far as the major pollsters are concerned, this just goes back to the Clinton administration. They do manipulate the data, and you can't believe a lot of what they say, especially in crisis numbers, economic inflation, otherwise. The data lie all the time.
So why do Americans support the Ukraine policy? And what does this mean? Why do Americans overwhelmingly support onerous sanctions, additional troop deployments, and the endless provision of lethal weapons when at the same time they acknowledge that they are extremely or very concerned about the possibility of a US war with Russia? Don't they realize that these hybrid attacks on Russia are a form of warfare that will eventually lead to a direct military clash between Washington and Moscow? And why do Americans support these draconian measures anyway? Don't they know that Putin warned that NATO expansion to Ukraine would force Russia to respond militarily? Don't they know that many of our brightest foreign policy experts have warned against NATO expansion into Ukraine? Don't they know that Russia has repeatedly warned that NATO expansion could lead to war? Don't they know that the democratically elected president of Ukraine was toppled in a CIA-backed coup in 2014 and replaced with a Washington stooge? Do they not know that from 2015 on, the CIA has been training far-right Ukrainian paramilitaries and extremists to conduct an insurgency against Russian forces that were going to be lured across the border in an attempt to create an Afghanistan-type quagmire? Don't they know that Washington has been planning to use Ukraine as a battering ram against Russia in order to spread its military bases across Central Asia to circle China for at least the last 8 years? Don't they know that the Ukrainian army had been shelling residential areas in the area inhabited by ethnic Russians for 8 years before Putin was forced to send in his troops? Don't they know that Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has admitted that the war started 8 years ago when the legitimate government was toppled? He told CNN's Farid Zakaria, "I made a point that the war in Ukraine has been lasting for 8 years. It is not just some special military operation." Don't they know that if Zelensky had maintained the status quo and Ukraine had remained a neutral country, this war never would have begun? Don't they know our own director of the CIA called NATO membership for Ukraine the reddest of red lines for Russia? Don't they know that NATO's eastward expansion is, and has always been, a material threat to Russia's national security? Aren't Russian mothers and children deserving of the same safety and security provided to American mothers and children? Or should we insist that they live with Washington's combat troops, tanks and nuclear missiles pointed at them across the border? Aren't they entitled to live their lives without NATO's gun pointed at their heads or Washington's dagger put to their throats? And I mean, you could say that obviously you're going to get Russia's point of view if you're watching RT, and RT and Sputnik were banned from Europe. You can only find them on Rumble and Odyssey now. But as far as I'm aware, they weren't actually banned in America, although I don't know whether they were on the normal television. I mean, over here in Britain, you could get RT just through your normal TV aerial and you could get it for free. You would imagine that people that were watching that knew that there was this other point of view, this Russian point of view. But I'm not sure whether in America you're able to get it through the TV aerial or whether it's just on the internet over there. Because I do know that in America you can still get it on the internet. You can't even get it on the internet over here. Do you know that, Matt? Can you get RT on the television over there? Or is it just an internet thing, which would explain why people don't know Russia's point of view in this if it's just an internet thing over there?
I don't think I've ever seen RT on TV before at any time. Everything I do is either, you know, videos and, you know, YouTube, whatever it is, or reading. But none of those sites have been banned, although I think the Russian Ministry of Defense for a while was, because I couldn't get to it when I was looking for it. It was the only website I couldn't get to. But of course, in Europe, without the First Amendment, you know, there's a huge problem. The governments are more, not to mention being closer to the action. This is simple masochism as far as their national policies are concerned, and Washington calls the shots here. So obviously they're not coming from a position of strength when they have to ban the opposition. And one of the reasons that Zelensky got Man of the Year is, if you read the article, it's nothing but, you know, slogans, cliches, constantly talking about, you know, the leftist values and liberal democracy, all, you know, treated as one thing. That the left, as I've been saying for a long time now, is the war party. Republicans, and, you know, they usually are during the Cold War. There's been a book released that tries to explain the absence of an anti-war movement by military investments in civilian areas, which is a very stupid thing to do. Those have always been there. That was there during the Vietnam War. No, it's ideology. The fact that among party, I saw this on Daily Stormer, that Democrats and Republicans, their issues ordered by rank of priority. And for Republicans, the Ukraine issue is something like 10th. The Democrats, it's fifth or sixth. So, and certainly if you reduce it to foreign policy, it would be number one. The author here, this is Mike Whitney, who I've always liked. I've cited him before. I've learned from him before. But this passage you just mentioned, I don't know if he's ever met an American before. You have something like half of Americans who can't explain what the powers of the presidency are, or even could even tell you what the Supreme Court does specifically. And could, about 40% can't name a single Supreme Court justice. I'm not sure what he, this sounds like he's using this as a rhetorical device. Don't they know? I think he full well knows that the answer is no. Why in heaven's name would Americans dig deep into this, especially since, you know, information is highly limited? You know, if you use Google to search things, of course, RT and Sputnik and me and people like that, that's, you're not going to come up. You'll come up on page 20. So they may not be banned in the sense that they are over there, but it's, you know, the shadow banning is also extremely significant. But essentially what Whitney's doing here is he's listing all of the arguments that anyone who knows anything over there knows is true, and then says, well, the Americans essentially don't know it. And then he's also assuming that these research centers are being honest. But the point I was making is that he's on the cover of Time, Zelensky, and the whole thing is his upholding of freedom and liberalism. Now, I'm not sure they have to know that he's banned all political parties, that he has shut down all opposition media. And now, as some of you may not know, he has banned the Russian Orthodox Church on his territory, but that's not enough because there's always interactions between the Ukrainians and the Russians. Any Ukrainian branch of the church that's had any consecrated a Russian bishop or anything like that, or has any contact with Russia at any time, is also going to be banned, which means the entire Orthodox Church there is going to be banned. But for the left, this is the core of their value system. You know, the last time the Orthodox Church was banned outright with prison sentences, well, the same group of people did this in 1922 and 21. So, of course, Americans don't know this stuff. Of course, they don't know what Zelensky's doing over there. How many believe that the media is being honest would be a more interesting question, but that's not included on any of these. You know, far-right Ukrainian paramilitaries, which kind of makes me smile, they couldn't define that if there was a pistol to their head. Any of these things. These are fairly complex and obscure geopolitical ideas. They're kind of on the surface here, but this is way beyond the ken of even educated Americans.
Yeah, Zelensky is completely manufactured. You're saying there that he's Time Man of the Year. I think that's actually Person of the Year. And I guess we should just be thankful that it wasn't a drag queen. Well, how could Russia not see NATO as a threat? This is from an article at antiwar.com. NATO has long known that Russian leaders since the end of the Cold War, not just Putin, have perceived NATO's eastward expansion, and particularly its expansion into Ukraine, as a threat. In response to NATO's statement at the 2008 summit in Bucharest, the Russian leadership made clear that they saw this promise as an existential threat. Putin warned that NATO membership for Georgia and Ukraine was a direct threat to Russian security. How could Russia not see NATO as a threat? How else could Russia perceive an alliance that moved to its borders, absorbed its neighbours, but exclusively excluded it as anything but hostile? Robert Gates observed that it was recklessly ignoring what the Russians considered their own vital national interests. In a February 2022 press conference, Putin said, "Today we see where NATO is, in Poland, in Romania, and in the Baltic states. Now anti-ballistic missile launchers are deployed in Romania and are being set up in Poland. They will probably be there soon if they are not yet built. These are MK-41 launchers that can launch Tomahawks. In other words, they are no longer just counter-missiles, and these assault weapons can cover thousands of kilometers of our territory. Is this not a threat to us?" Now, I think a lot of people look at this and they think, well, NATO hasn't really invaded anywhere. Why does Putin think NATO is such a threat? Well, didn't Russia at one point say, like, well, can we join NATO? Now the Soviet Union is no more because NATO was set up to be a counterbalance to the Soviet Union. So when the Soviet Union fell apart, naturally, NATO should have also fallen apart, or they should have accepted Russia in. So the fact that NATO refuses to allow Russia as a member shows that NATO is set up to counterbalance Russia, basically. So to then have them all up against the borders is, you know, it's an existential threat to Russia, isn't it? But I have spoken to people and they said, oh, well, why does Russia see NATO as a threat anyway? And I think it's quite logical. If they won't allow Russia to join, then they are a threat to Russia, aren't they? What do you make of that, Matt?
I remember that. A long time. I think that was in the Yeltsin era that there was an attempt to join it. I can't imagine they were being serious. But of course, at the time, Yeltsin was getting relatively good press in the West. Well, let me give you an example. I think this was last week. I can't remember the exact date, but the Solomon Islands, which, you know, for World War II people know exactly where the Solomon Islands are in the Pacific. That was a battle in the Pacific War. They're, in essence, an independent country, and they just signed a security agreement with China. Now, despite the fact that those islands are very far from the U.S., the Americans threatened the island of like five people with military action, because allying with China is a threat to American security, despite its location. Here, of course, we're talking about a country which is heavily Russian, that speaks Russian, you know, 60, 70% of its population, huge Russian media and everything else right on their border, a long history, at least the eastern parts, long history with Russia, the Russian Empire, being destroyed. And then, you know, but apparently that's not sufficient for it to be a security threat. But, you know, if it were a liberal government in power and Ukraine had, you know, taken over by Cossacks, then the U.S. would be threatening Ukraine. So it's just a matter of ideology. Who's promoting one idea? I know there's several congressmen who attacking what little anti-war movement there was, saying that this war is about leftism. This is about liberal values. Homosexuality and all this stuff. That's what this fight is about, which is why left support this war, despite the fact they don't know anything about it. But they have some vague conception that Putin and Russia don't like the homosexual agenda, which, of course, all normal people don't. And, of course, it's very unpopular in Ukraine. So Zelensky is doing double duty there in banning pretty much everything that he can't directly control. And he still is a sign of liberal democracy, and which, of course, verifies what I've been saying, I think, since the late 90s, that ideology matters over everything, including profits, because ideology undergirds the power of American unilateralism. So liberalism is consistent with destroying the press, banning churches. Now, we've known that, but now we have these open – I was revealing in the late 90s where – oligarchs were considered the vanguard of democracy. I have quote after quote on that. So the way that the left presents itself and the reality of the left is two completely different things. But that's been the case for every revolution from Britain to the color revolutions. They lie. They're a dishonest group of people because they know that most of their agenda requires a lot of brainwashing and some authoritarian power to put it in place, whether it be the Supreme Court, whether it be executive order, whether it be direct banning, like in Ukraine and the U.S. And beyond all that, the fact that they're closing Russian churches and Ukrainian churches that may or may not have had connections with Russian churches, it's possible that in Western Europe that's going to follow, that they're going to say these Russian churches are agents or something like that. COVID, you know, they were closing churches down all over the place, which is a point that Lukashenko made in his many speeches on the question, that this is an excuse for that kind of thing. Now they have a new excuse. You know, we know how America operates when it's at war. It shuts down opposition. And, you know, a major war anyway. It certainly happened in World War II. But Vietnam, because the enemy was Marxist, you had this very artificial anti-war movement, massive, that despite all of this today doesn't exist. So ideology is the connecting tissue with all of this, because that's what undergirds power capitalism.
We have Zelensky banning the Russian Orthodox Church, and you have Russia banning the promotion of homosexuality, pedophilia, and transgenderism to anyone, not just to children, but adults now as well. So I think you can see from that the two poles here that are pushing against one another, the liberal democratic progressive idea that is pushing up against the traditionalist idea, and that's what this is all about. And of course, it is very important that they have this universal propaganda, that they push the narrative with it continually in order to get people to believe it. Weeks before, Putin had also complained that elements of the US global defense system are being deployed near Russia. He spoke again of the MK-41 launches in Romania and soon in Poland. At that time, he added that if this infrastructure continues to move forward, and if US and NATO missile systems are deployed in Ukraine, their flight time to Moscow will be only 7 to 10 minutes, or even 5 minutes for hypersonic systems. This is a huge challenge for us and for our security. And that is from Stoltenberg's provocative pledge on Ukraine's NATO membership by Ted Snyder at antiwar.com. How is it that the American people don't know these things? How is it that the vast majority of them think that Putin started the war? Or that the war started on February 24th when Russian tanks crossed the border into Ukraine? How can the majority of the population in a democratic country that is ostensibly committed to free speech and freedom of the press be so tragically misinformed, propagandized, and indoctrinated? Is that it? Are Americans actually the most weak-minded, brainwashed sheeple on earth? This is from the American Conservative. From the onset of the Ukraine war, the corporate media, politicians, and all the controlled NGOs throughout America and Western Europe were lockstep in their claim that the Russian military action in eastern Ukraine was unprovoked and unjustified, an act of aggression that could not be allowed to stand. But there was one problem with this propaganda blitz. It was totally untrue. The deep state, the government elites, intelligence community, and the military establishment have spent decades threatening and provoking Russia by pushing NATO up against their border. You do not have to like Russia to see this, and you can detest Vladimir Putin until the cows come home. The fundamental issue remains the same. The Russians view NATO on their border as an act of aggression and a threat to their national security, and we have known this for decades. The record is clear and unassailable. And that comes from Blame the Deep State for Carnage in Ukraine by George D. O'Neill Jr. at the American Conservative. So no, the war in Ukraine did not start on February 24th. And no, evil Putin did not start the war. And I think you can really tell that it is this narrative that they're spinning when they use the same language all the time. Putin's brutal war in the Ukraine. Stoltenberg is always saying brutal war in the Ukraine. And Boris Johnson was always saying Putin's brutal war in the Ukraine. Just watch out for the amount of times they use that descriptive word brutal. And you can see that they're just reading off a script. Matt, what do you make of this? You must have heard the word brutal war in Ukraine at least once.
I try to forget it, but it's true when you have newspaper headlines that are almost identical, using the same language, the same modifiers, sometimes even the passive voice, which, you know, you shouldn't do. So certainly journalists shouldn't be doing that. But that's part of the agenda. The media are far more powerful than any military organization because the media decide whether a military organization is good or bad. The American press during Vietnam simply lied about the war, saying the NVA and the Viet Cong are winning, the U.S. is, they're dying, there's no, you know, at a time where it simply wasn't true. They claimed that the Tet Offensive was a huge loss for the U.S., but of course the opposite was true. The My Lai Massacre, I have a book coming out on some of these myths. You know, this is what the press does. You know, it supported Vietnam because it was a communist state. It's supporting Ukraine because it's a leftist state of a different type, but one that's now replaced communism as far as the left is concerned. Now, what George O'Neill here is saying, the American Conservative, is hardly interesting. It should sound familiar to all of you here. And he's, you know, kind of, you know, making common sense statements. I don't know who his audience is, but of course he's right. And, you know, I've warned about this for so many years. And I'm not sure what he means by the deep state. I think he just means the state, but certainly private actors are central to this too. But the fact that he has to repeat a common sense argument that any fool, who doesn't, you don't have to know anything about geopolitics to know that this is a problem and that you can't provoke somebody consistently. Now, as far as what kind of impact this is going to have, I looked this up at some point, you know, American trust of the media. You know, the numbers, even the manipulated numbers, don't seem to add up to the, you know, sheer amount of propaganda over the last year, or really more than that. So it seems that, yeah, they do. Americans I've only really started talking about this recently. Americans rely on authority. If someone's in authority, they have to be right. Otherwise, they're going to have to admit that entire sections of the ruling class are totally corrupt, and they have been supporting corrupt people. Are Americans actually the most weak-minded, brainwashed sheeple on earth? Probably. Yeah, I think so. And the reason it is because Americans are vaguely educated. The more education you have, the less you think you could be fooled. You don't want to admit, you know, being not just wrong, but stupid all this time. So I think uneducated people might even be better in this sense, because they're less likely to believe what authority tells them. This is still has that middle class value that runs America. Middle class is based, among other things, on, you know, what William Burnham used to call the managerial society, that middle management section that attaches white collar to the system. So given this propaganda, at the very least, I mean, it isn't as if the media say, you know, please support Ukraine because they're right. That would never work. But it's just kind of in the air. There's several PR firms working overtime that have been paid by some of these aid money that makes it so that it seems ridiculous to oppose it. It's not a direct command, but it's something that shows up in videos and music and just everywhere, knowing full well how people come to their opinions. And it's not so much they're commanded to believe something. It's just that it's in the air. It's everywhere they go. And because they're passive most of the time, they simply absorb it that way. That's far more. The Soviets didn't have anything like that. They were unaware of this kind of thing. So, this is a basic common sense argument that O'Neill makes. And the same thing for Whitney, of course. But the fact that they have to explain this is a frightening part. A vaguely educated population doesn't believe it can be fooled.
Well, it looks like there were warnings from as far back as 1998 that this would happen. What the evidence shows is that this Ukrainian conflict is another bloody confection that was conjured up long ago in elite think tanks and neocon hideaways, where Russia's economic integration into Europe and the eventual emergence of a free trade zone from Lisbon to Vladivostok was seen as real and present danger to Washington's voracious lust for global power. These same elites settled on Ukraine as the launching pad for their war on Russia, despite the fact that Ukraine would ultimately face disintegration as part of a Moscow-imposed final settlement, and despite the fact that all of Europe would be plunged into another dark ages of energy and food scarcity, widespread deindustrialization, and third world destitution. Check out this quote from foreign policy giant George Kennan, who authored America's containment strategy that was used during the Cold War. Here is what he told the New York Times in 1998. I think the Russians will gradually react quite adversely, and it will affect their policies. I think it is a tragic mistake. There was no reason for this whatsoever. No one was threatening anybody else. This expansion would make the founding fathers of this country turn over in their graves. We have signed up to protect a whole series of countries, even though we have neither the resources nor the intention to do so in any serious way. NATO expansion was simply a light-hearted action by a Senate that has no real interest in foreign affairs. And that's from Blame the Deep State for Carnage in Ukraine by George D. O'Neill Jr. at the American Conservative. That's very interesting there. You know, you still had these foreign policy experts that were pointing this out in 1998, but we don't appear to have anybody that is pointing this out today apart from alternative journalists like ourselves. Matt, what do you make of this?
Well, this is how you know that this is of central importance to the regime. They did the same thing with the invasion of Afghanistan or Iraq. They have one agenda, one explanation that they give to the left, the other explanation they give to the Fox News types, whatever they might be. And when they build bipartisan support on any issue, you know that this is priority number one for the regime, making debate almost impossible. It's funny, the last comment here, action by a Senate that has no real interest in foreign affairs is really bizarre, because that's what the Senate's supposed to be. It has a certain level of legislative power over treaties and things that the House doesn't have, because the Senate was supposed to be an elite body, not a popular body. And which, of course, you know, made sense. But now you have scat comics being becoming senators, which is very Roman in its absurdity. But remember, 1998, Russia was still in receivership. People were still saying that Russia was going to collapse on its own weight, and it can't. And until, of course, Putin took over, then everything changed. So Russia in 1998, you know, Chechnya was still going on, was hardly a threat to the left or anybody else. Putin changed all of that. You know, the anti-fag stuff, that's right in the Constitution now. So, and of course, again, Keenan was right. I was in grad school when this came out. I remember it. I remember other elites talking about it, that this is really stupid. And people were saying, well, Russia's liberal now, so we don't have to worry about it too much. But what he would call the deep state knows better. You know, politicians are idiots, but the regime actors are not. And they know that, well, this was right at the time. It's not going to remain right. And of course, I was at the time saying that Russia is the only hope for a fight for globalism, even before Putin. But unfortunately, with being so poorly led, it can't be. And so now that's all gone away, showing that all of this stuff is tightly controlled from above. And you know, if they could strip famous doctors of their MD for coming out against the vax, then they certainly can dethrone any elite they want. Who opposes this agenda, and they don't want that. So, you know, sometimes, you know, yeah, they're wealthy, they're powerful, but my God, they have no freedom whatsoever. This is not their opinions, especially since they live in a sanitized, censored bubble. This isn't their opinion. This is what they've been told over years. So, and that's the issue with Keenan. But of course, that's all gone today, and it's because of Putin, of course.
Well, foreign policy analysts certainly did warn against it. Have you wondered why respected foreign policy analysts like George Kennan, former Secretary of Defense William Perry, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, and former Ambassador to the Soviet Union Jack F. Matlock Jr. all oppose NATO membership for Ukraine? Have you ever asked yourself why a foreign policy mandarin like John Mearsheimer would put his reputation on the chopping block to inform the people that if the policy persists, Ukraine will be obliterated and the US will likely end up in a nuclear war with Russia? Here is what Mearsheimer had to say. The West is leading Ukraine down the primrose path, and the end result is that Ukraine is going to get wrecked. What we're doing is encouraging the Ukrainians to play tough with the Russians. We are encouraging the Ukrainians to think that they will ultimately become part of the West, because we will ultimately defeat the Russians. And of course, the Ukrainians are playing along with this, and the Ukrainians are almost completely unwilling to compromise with the Russians, and instead want to pursue a hardline policy. Well, as I said to you before, if they do that, the end result is that their country is going to be wrecked, and what we are doing is, in effect, encouraging that outcome. And that is John Mearsheimer from The West is Leading Ukraine Down the Primrose Path, which is apparently on YouTube. And I do have to wonder what the Ukrainians themselves think about this, because I should imagine they just want this war to be ended. I don't think they had that much to do with the political side of things. There's so much corruption over there anyway. I doubt whether they even know why it is that they're fighting. So I should imagine that they just want this to end. I mean, he's saying here the Ukrainians are playing along with this. It's not the Ukrainians, I don't think. I think it's just Zelensky that is really pushing this. What do you make of it, Matt? Do you think the Ukrainians are supportive of Zelensky, or do you think they just want an end to the war?
Well, we've covered older Ukrainian-based polls on their attitude towards Russia. And it certainly, even in the West, was not hostile. And certainly in the East, in the center, in the South, there was huge support for. Now, that was a long time ago. I saw a meme not too long ago that's, you know, it's split down the middle, and it has major media talking about Ukraine 10 years ago. And it's extremely hostile, you know, the most corrupt country. You know, it has no functional government and stuff like that. And then recently, the same people and the same institution saying the exact opposite. So someone's giving orders. And when you consider the purpose of journalism, you know, newspapers, generally speaking, are not sources of authority because they're not experts in the field. Their job is to tell a story, not to tell the truth. I'll be saying this until the day I die. The truth is far more complex than the Americans can absorb. So they need essentially an action movie, Rambo-style thing, Die Hard thing, rather than actual reporting, because that's easy to follow. Very clear, good guys and bad guys. They want to engage readers and, of course, brainwash them over time. So I don't even think they have a lot of cognitive dissonance over this, especially since now everybody that the regime doesn't like just gets banned. And don't forget, too, as far as on the ground in Ukraine is concerned, there's a big difference between supporting the present government or even the present system and the war. Those are two different issues. I guarantee you the government in Ukraine has a popularity rating of zero. And I have quite a bit of evidence for that. No one supports that government. No rational person does. Not even his own workers do. But as the war, of course, is a different issue. But I've come across a lot of evidence that even these nationalist battalions have abandoned it, saying that there is no hope here. And we provoke this kind of thing. I have to go search for those again, but I've come across them many times now. So, the Ukrainian population has no voice. Ukraine has been a wreck since the mid-90s, with a few small areas of bright light under Kuchma and Yanukovych for a very short period of time. Their economy was wrecked in the mid-90s and was not rebuilt. Whatever function, especially in the non-eastern regions, was sold off or taken over by someone else, and only a handful of almost exclusively Jewish oligarchs were making any money, and then bringing that money abroad. So as far as Ukrainians are concerned, we're never going to know directly what they think, because I wouldn't believe a major polling organization, I don't even know how they go about it, talking about the Ukrainian population. There's not a whole lot on that. But there was never any overt hostility to Russia in the 90s and 2000s. But given the fact, and they have to know that Russian news sources, anything Russian has been banned openly by executive fiat in the country. And therefore, what they're getting is propaganda. They've been living in a third world country for decades. So as far as the system is concerned, they have no love for it. And I think they're going to be happy to see it go.
Has definitely been used as a proxy for America to go to war against Russia. The United States is deliberately misleading Ukraine so it can use its territory to prosecute its war on Russia. It is a cynical manipulation tantamount to genocide. The US has no vital national security interests in Ukraine, and nor does it care whether its cities and people are pounded into oblivion. What matters to Washington is delivering a blow to Russia, seducing Russia into a conflict that will cause it to overextend itself militarily or economically, as Rand said, thus rendering it incapable of projecting power beyond its borders. That is the goal, and that has always been the goal, to weaken Russia. None of this has anything to do with Ukraine or the Ukrainian people. It is all about power, pure unalloyed geopolitical power. The bottom line, foreign policy elites and their globalist allies have decided that the only way to arrest America's accelerating economic decline and preserve the nation's role as the world's preeminent superpower is through the use of military force. Clearly, that decision has already been made. What we are seeing in Ukraine, and soon to be in Taiwan, is further evidence that America's hawkish power brokers are not going to relinquish their exalted position in the world without a fight. They are going to use every weapon in their arsenal to maintain their vice-like grip on power. This tells us that the transition away from the rules-based system will not be quick or bloodless. And despite optimistic predictions to the contrary, there is nothing inevitable about the multipolar world. Its emergence depends entirely on a war that is just beginning and whose outcome is still unknown. And that is the quote that we began the episode with. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
Well, I think we're one of the few that have been talking about this for so many years, I can't even remember now. These arguments that he makes and statements that he makes is nothing new to our listeners and to you and me. But this approach implies that Americans can see things systematically, or even American elites can see things systematically. I think in the economic realm, financial realm, they can, and they have long-term strategies. But as far as politicians, anyone else like that, They don't. You know, we go back to nominalism and all this stuff. They can't think in terms of connected systems. But the most important in this entire thing is the only way to arrest the decline of the economy is through military power. That's a line I've used 100 times. and meaning that all other forms of getting the country out of its depression have failed. And that's really the takeaway from all this.
Well, it's a great shame that that's all they think they can do is just create wars in other parts of the world in order to stimulate the economy. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.